Jackie Bakes of Stuart Peterson now joins us. Hey, Jackie, thanks for being with us.
Well, you're welcome. I love it.
Let's start with support and resistance. Much in the way of change this week?
Well, a little, not a lot. The biggest change is probably that I've gone to the monthly continuous charts now for December and March, and November and March, rather than staying with September. September will be done next week anyway. So December, we've got support at 362, 315, and 290. Resistance at 392, 416, and 440. March, support 371, 325, and 305. Resistance, $4, 424, and 448. And then when we go to beans, we look at November, support at 854, 810, and 784. Resistance, 902, 959, and 1006. And then we go and we look at, and I probably should have done January, but I did March. We look at March, and we've got support at 833, 780, and 716, which is a big drop, but a one-day drop, basically, compared to what we have right now. And resistance at 908, 953, and 990.
Any news from the export inspections?
Well, it's kind of interesting. Wheat exports are still running ahead 25%. They've been pretty steadily doing that for a lot of weeks now. Corn is 16% behind. It was 15% behind last week, running very close. USDA says it's going to be 14% behind for the season. Now, when I talk about this, we have to keep remembering these are Gulf exports. In other words, things that are going out on ships. Soybeans, 20.4% behind. Last week, they were 22% behind. So they've improved a little bit, and they're close. The USDA was saying that they should be down about 20% for the year. So we're closing in. You know, the end of the year comes, the end of this month. So we're getting close.
Hey, we're down at the bottom end of the range, maybe a little past that at this point. anything, and we've been here in other years, probably earlier than in the year than this, more like July. Anything that producers need to consider as it relates to marketing?
Well, I put out there's two things that concern me right at the moment. I put out a broadcast voicemail to all of our clients today. I'd like to see them come in and buy some calls to cover the crop insurance gains that they've got. You know, we have a $4 crop insurance price, and of course December's at in the 370s. We have a 954 crop insurance price on beans, and when you look at beans being down in the 870s, you've got to really there's a lot of money there. So when you look at the pro farmer tour that's going on, and some of the feedback that we're getting, and I do believe we're going to see a bounce in this. I think it's a wise thing to do. You know, get in here and buy some calls and get yourself some coverage. Also, we've got quite a lot of people that they have free DP, and it's ending on August 31st. Worst I've heard so far is having to pay 20 cents plus ongoing storage fees. And so my answer to that would be, sell the grain and buy yourself a call. You can go out into December and buy an at-the-money call for less than 20 cents. And stop the storage, and stop perhaps the erosion in basis. I mean, maybe it'll get better. You really don't know, but it's something you really have to give a thought to before you go ahead and just renew it and keep on going from there.
Of course, we'll hear more about Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour in just a bit here on the Closing Market Report. USDA had their August report numbers out. We've talked a little bit about those, and the objective yield is coming up from them, too. That'll be an interesting one to get a look at and to put it all into perspective.
Well, that's the truth. You know, I think that's one of the things that really threw a hammer into or a wrench into the works this time is just that we didn't have the objective yields that we normally have, and so there was a lot of confusion about that, on top of the fact that I think a lot of farmers and a lot of traders just they want to know how the prevent plant acres actually factor in to yield and total production. So Lance Honig, who is the head of NAS, came out and he said, you know, prevent plant acres are not included in NAS numbers, and that's because they weren't planted, you know, and so therefore they're just not included. If they're not acres, there's not any yield that's attached to them, and therefore they're not in production. But it says, he also said, while it doesn't impact the yield number, it impacts the total production number because the way that the USDA calculates it, total acres harvested for grain, and they then apply a yield to those acres to figure out what the final production number is going to be. So ultimately, I think he's just saying, harvested acres is going to be reduced primarily because we had prevented acres. So he feels confident, though, that this 90 million acres that they have from August is very close. He said, in addition to all the survey work and the satellite data they had, they actually had the opportunity, you know, to, of course, go through the FSA certified acres as well. So I guess what he's trying to say to us is he doesn't think that we're necessarily going to see a big change in the total acres planted. Now, the change could come in the harvested acres.
So let's turn our attention then to some outside sources. Anything new on AFS?
Well, yeah, that stuff, that African swine fever is some scary stuff, Todd, I'm telling you. And Russia is now saying that they've got it on the regions that border China. So that means it's going out into another country. You know, it just continues to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And I'm not, you know, it impacts us. Actually, at a time for trade war, China's probably, the African swine fever has probably been to their benefit because they're using a lot less soy meal than they had been. So they have less demand for beans than they used to have. But it's just a very, very scary thing. I hope that we never get it here.
Anything else that we ought to be taking a look at? You usually dig a couple of things up for me.
Yeah, well, I like to do that. Yeah, I'd like to. I'll stay in South America for the moment. Well, let's look at Argentina. Just think about this in our terms. Prices, the consumer price index went up 2.2% in July. It is now up 54.4% versus a year earlier. And we whine, right? We've got nothing to complain about. The peso lost 17% last week. It's down 31%. You couldn't have a worse situation. Prices are going up. The value of your currency is going down. And Argentina just went to the International Monetary Fund and asked for the largest loan ever, $57 billion. To try and stabilize that country, you know. So on top of this, for the farmer in Argentina, the talk is back out there again that they want to increase the taxes on commodities, on corn and beans, like they've done in the past. And I think, and aside to that, we talked last week about the primary election. The person who was the overall winner, guess who their running mate is? It's Cristina. She used to be the head of Argentina, and she just about drove in the ground. Well, she's now going to run alongside of him as the secondary. So I think we're going to go back to what we had seen back in the early 2000s, that you're going to see Argentinians are going to be sleeping on U.S. dollars again, because this is just not a good situation. And now they have China in there, I think, trying to take advantage of the situation. You know, they're bidding on dredging the Paraná River so that the they can haul larger, you know, larger boats through it. And you know, whenever a country seems to be weak, that's when China's right there to see if they can't put some pressure onto them. They tried to do that in Brazil. They said that they would build a railroad in Brazil as long as it always belonged to them and it never belonged to Brazil. So that's interesting. And China, just to quickly finish things up, there was a good Wall Street Journal article in China about the People's Bank. They've been talking about changing their commercial bank interest rates and the way that they're calculated. And so they finally have moved forward with this. And they said 18 banks now have to show the People's Bank of China the best interest rates they offer to their clients based on the rate set by the bank's central medium-term lending facility, which is a source of credit that the banks use for themselves. It's described basically as more market orientation liberalization. But that isn't really a very clear thing, because now the banks get to calculate their lending rates based on an interest rate that is determined by the Bank of China rather than another interest rate that's determined by the Bank of China. But the most interesting part about the whole thing was that the new approach totally left out real estate. It was only for commercial loans, not for any mortgages. And I think that they said that this is likely because back in 2016, when they changed their rates, there was a borrowing spree that went on, and debt rose $6.2 trillion. That's $887 billion U.S. dollars, compared with an increase of around $3 trillion a year on the average for the 5 years before. So I don't think they're in any shape to be able to do that. I think what they're really doing, Todd, if you look further into the economy, is they're trying to find ways to be able to give cheaper money to commercial businesses because they're suffering at this point in time.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd. Have a good one.
You too. That's Jackie Vick. She is with Stuart Peterson. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Jeff Wilson joins us from the western leg of the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. Jeff, thanks so much for being with us. Where are you at the moment?
At the moment, we're in Logan, Iowa. We came out of Nebraska City and came zigzagging up our way across the border between Iowa and Nebraska, and we've been taking samples all morning in intermittent showers. At least it's not thunder showers like we woke up to this morning in Nebraska City.
Well, we'll get to those numbers from Nebraska that were released last night right now, and then hear more about what's happening in Iowa in just a bit. So tell me about what you saw yesterday and what the field numbers look like.
Well, basically we toured Nebraska for two days, and the best thing is we took 300 samples of corn and 300 samples of beans. So we have a big sampling size, and that helps to kind of narrow in the averages. We found 172.6 state average, or at least the area we cover, tour average, and that was down 3.7% from last year's number. And I think the thing that we were taken aback by was that it was actually up 2.9% from the prior three-year average. So it's kind of an average-looking crop, I would think. That's what we're calling it. There's some good, there's some bad. I think the story for Nebraska is that rain that we had early on in the season, I think that hurt some of the stands and some of the irrigated fields. That brought down the irrigated fields. It just took the top end off. Still very good yields. But with the rains that we've had across the dry land areas probably has helped those crops a little bit. I mean, some of the farmers we spoke with in Nebraska said they have had double the amount of rains this year, and that's probably helped to boost the bottom end of the range. So you basically have kind of a steady crop in terms of both irrigated and non-irrigated corn, and that kind of gives you an average crop, and it's not really facing a lot of problems in terms of an early frost. Or a normal frost. Obviously, an early frost is going to nip it a little bit, but a normal frost date probably isn't going to hurt the corn crop very much.
And as you travel through Iowa today, what are you seeing?
Variable, a little more variable. You know, we're coming up out of that southwest part of Iowa where it was really wet early in the season, and then they had some dryness, and then there was some, like today we're in rain. So I think there were some problems with some of the plant stands early on, and that may have reduced the plant populations in the corn crop because it's had a pretty good range, 137 to 210 after six stops. And the story is that you could definitely tell in the poor yielding areas they had some plant stand problems where there were some misses, just, you know, plants didn't come up out of the ground. So, but in the fields that had, the one field that had 210, it was planted early. It was already dented, and it looked like a really good crop. So a little more variability in terms of yield and maturity in this southwest part of Iowa.
That's Jeff Wilson. He is on the western leg of the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. Brian Grady is leading the eastern leg, and he now joins us from the road. First, let's start with those Indiana numbers that you announced last night in Tremont, Illinois.
Yeah, Todd. Corn yield came in at 161.5 bushels per acre, and that happened to be down 11.4% from what we found last year on crop tour. So significant reduction. Now, last year was a really good year, and this year is not, obviously. When we look at the comparisons to what USDA had with August 1, they were down 12.2% for Indiana with their corn yield. So, yeah, the percentage changes match up pretty closely there. We'll have to see. It's the same story as in Ohio. There's a lot of the crop where we measured potential yield on, and how much of that is realized into the finish line is going to be critical. And obviously, we need extended weeks on the end of the growing season there.
And you've been traveling through Illinois for the last couple of days. What have you seen?
Yeah, Illinois, I'll be honest with you. I'll speak just to my route at this point in time because we'll tabulate those final numbers tonight and release them. In crop district 5 there, when I came across the border, just wasn't impressed at all. Corn yields struggled there. Saw some prevent plant fields way more than you'd normally see all those fields planted, and there were definite prevent plant fields, numerous ones through that crop district 5. So I was underwhelmed, and the yield results weren't what would be normal. And obviously, this isn't a normal year in Illinois. Now, in western Illinois this morning, we've seen crop maturity that's better. Not necessarily up to snuff in many of the cases, but it's better than what it was further out east. And we've also, seen yields somewhat improve. Some of the fields have really good yields. Some of the fields have really poor yields, and it's kind of all over the board. But in a nutshell, that probably summarizes what we've seen in western Illinois so far this morning is high variability.
I would take it good yield, poor yield is potentially based on planting date and maturity, or is the crop that you're measuring that's been not very mature actually have a pretty good yield potential too?
Some of the immature fields do have some decent potential, but once again, how much of that can they realize? I think that's really the question moving forward is, what is it? Can we realize how much of that into the finish line? And so that a lot of uncertainty there. We don't know, how it'll all finish up. We have to put an estimate on it at the end of the week, but that's all part of what Pro Farmer does at the end of the week after we have the crop tour data in our hands.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it, Brian.
You bet.
Brian Grady is on the eastern leg of the tour, and Sherman Newland now joins us from the western leg of the tour. He's with Risk Management Commodities. Hey, Sherman, thanks so much for being with us. Tell me about Iowa yesterday and today.
Today is our first day in Iowa. We left Nebraska City, and actually we're in a two-car tour today, and we jumped ahead in a couple hours, and we started north of Denison on Route 59. We stopped, made two stops in Ida County, and the two stops in Ida averaged 172 and 211. Then we made two more stops in Cherokee County, which is still going straight north from there, and there were 218 and 186. And then we made one stop in O'Brien County, and it was on the low side. That may have just been an outlier of a field. It was a little bit immature, and the rows around on the corn was 14, and it averaged 165. So far for the car, we've averaged 190 and a half per bushel on corn, which I don't know. I guess I was expecting a little bit higher than that for this area. I mean, the crops look good. They look healthy, but I don't know if it's just a lateness in the planting or what it is, but a little bit lower. I've seen some other cars coming in a little bit low too, on the low side for the corn here in Iowa, but we're just getting started going through here. We'll keep traveling north right now. I am north of Sanborn, so I'm about 20 miles from the Minnesota border. Then we're going to cut over and then angle back down towards Spencer, Iowa, where we'll have our meeting here tonight. As far as beans go, not too bad overall. Our car average is 1173. We've had 1,500 to 800 pod counts, but overall not too bad. Some of them are still putting on some blooms, so they could still put on a few more pods, but it's cloudy up here today, Todd. I mean, it's showery, and then I see the, these guys need sunshine and some warm air, some warm, temperatures to finish this crop off, but forecast, I think, is pretty cool for the next 2 weeks, from what I understand. Not what these guys are needing.
Mm-hmm. From a farmer perspective, you say this is not what these guys are needing. Is that because the second half of the corn crop is late and the beans are late? Because normally I'd be thinking, well, we get a little cooler weather in August and we get a little rainfall. That's pretty good for grain fill as long as we have the sunshine.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this crop looks good if it was July 21st instead of August 21st. And then, like I said, going forward, I mean, it's not a bad-looking crop up here. And the corn should, for the most part, in this part of Iowa, should finish pretty well the way it looks. But beans, they should be okay, but I think they're going to be on the lighter side as well, from what I've seen from our car. That's all I can vouch for. But the weather, you know, that, you talk to other tour people on tour and some of the farmers around here. We stopped, the farmer stopped us on our first stop today and, you know, asked us, hey, are you guys on tour? Like, yeah, and, you know, want to know what we were seeing. And he's like, everybody around here is probably going to be 20 to 30 bushel off on corn from last year. But so... But yeah, I mean, it needs some warm air and, you know, sunshine, and I don't know, you know, by the weather forecast if that's what's going to end up happening.
Hey, thanks so much, and good luck with the rest of your sampling for the day.
All right, thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Sherman Newland. He is with Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, and traveling on the western leg of the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. Denison, where he started today, is to the north and the west, not very far, really, from Des Moines, Iowa, but going straight north from there and then making a right-hand turn through Minnesota and coming back dead center in Spencer. So that's kind of his route. One of the best areas, frankly, of Iowa for corn production. So it was good to hear from him today. And we thank him for his update. Well, let's turn our attention now to the weather forecast. We're joined by Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Thanks, Drew, for being with us this afternoon. Let's start in the Midwest. We had some rainfall in my part of the world yesterday. Actually, I lost a tree. We had some wind as well. Can you tell me about those storms?
Well, you know, unfortunately, I'm sorry that you had some loss, but, you know, we needed that really bad. A lot of the central and eastern Midwest, as you know, has been hurting for moisture for an extended period of time. It'd be nice if it would come as a nice, slow, gentle, soaking rain, but it doesn't always work that way, especially not in the summer. So we have to take whatever we can when we can. And that rain, on top of other showers and thunderstorms that have occurred over the past couple of weeks, have done a really nice job in gradually improving some moisture situations from Iowa into Ohio. But we are still looking at some significant pockets of dryness out there. But the good news is that the crops are beginning to respond a little bit. Unfortunately, we're running out of growing season at the same time. And so it's going to be interesting to see how far these crops can improve before we get into the cooler air of September. Some of those crops, though, are going to look a little bit better over the next week or two, I think. We have received enough rain, and we're going to receive some additional moisture over the next 10 days that will further increase that topsoil moisture in profile.
Well, do we need to be concerned about cooler air in the month of September?
Oh, I think we very much do. Maybe not so much in the lower Midwest as we do in the upper Midwest. There's been all kinds of signs of coolness around in the northern hemisphere these past few weeks. We had a frost and a freeze event in northern Russia about 10 days to 2 weeks ago now that was about 3 to 4 weeks earlier than normal. We've had some frost in Canada on an almost weekly basis for the past 2 or 3 weeks in at least a portion of the prairies. There's only been a couple of light freezes up there, but it all is earlier than normal, and it just looks like kind of one of those years where we're going to have to watch real closely. And some of the forecast model runs here in recent days have been trying to promote a big cool surge coming into north-central parts of North America as we get to the last day or two of August and the first day or so of September. I think that the cold has been a little over-exaggerated, but... it is going to be a very cool period there. And then my concern is what happens after that. And I think about 2 weeks later, we may see the same kind of pattern repeated again. And that one might leave behind a little bit of threat to some of the crops in the U.S.
And a quick word on the world.
For the most part, everybody's in a status quo. We have seen a lot of improvement in India and portions of China. Both those countries had a very rough start to their growing season this summer, but they have managed much improvement since then, and the outlook is looking better and better for both those countries. Now, in Europe, we still have a lot of problems with dryness and pockets. France is better off now than it was last month, but it's still far from ideal. Poland continues to report very poor rainfall, and a recent report suggested some of their sugar beets and summer crops have been reduced because of that dryness. southeast corner of Europe into the southeast part of Ukraine has also been dealing with dryness, and this is damaging some of the late coarse grain and oil seeds like corn and soybeans and sunseed from Bulgaria and Romania all the way into Ukraine. So a little bit of trouble may be brewing in parts of southeastern Europe because of that scenario. And lastly, Australia, everyone's still concerned about that prolonged drought in Queensland and northeast New South Wales. There's still no sign of any big change there. I think they could get some showers in September, but they're not going to be the drought-busting rain that they so badly need.
Thanks so much, Drew.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.